Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, EPA Compliance Orders and Judicial Review Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 21, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Sackett v. EPA. This case involves two landowners who created a lot and a residential subdivision so that they could build a home there. The Environmental Protection Agency then issued to the landowners an administrative compliance order stating that the graded lawn was a wetland and directing the landowners to either remove the fill and restore the lot to its original condition or risk civil fines in the amounts of thousands of dollars for each day of noncompliance. The question before the court was whether the landowners may seek judicial review of the EPA's compliance order before it's actually enforced against them, and if the answer to that question is no, whether the compliance order deprives the landowners of due process of law. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held unanimously that the landowners may file suit in court to challenge the EPA's administrative compliance order before it is enforced against them. Justices Ginsburg and Alito each filed concurring opinions. To discuss the case, we have Elizabeth Pepez, who is a partner at Winston & Strawn, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Pepez.
This is Elizabeth Pepez from Winston & Strawn to discuss the recent Supreme Court opinion in number 10-1062, Sackett versus the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA. As I mentioned in the post-argument podcast we did on this case, it's the case that involves agency action against private homeowners that multiple justices characterized at argument as high-handed and outrageous. The court has now issued its opinion, and given the egregious facts, it's not surprising that the court reversed the Ninth Circuit's ruling dismissing the homeowner suit. The interesting issue in this case for the broader business and regulatory community has always been to what extent a victory for the homeowners might affect the availability of judicial review of agency orders in other cases against EPA and other agencies. I'll start with a quick recap of the facts and then summarize the opinion and talk a little bit about what it might mean for future cases. As noted, the facts of this particular case are egregious enough that they cause some to wonder why the government didn't settle or otherwise moot it before going to the Supreme Court. In a nutshell, the petitioner homeowners purchased a less than 1 acre lot in a residential subdivision and had started building their home there when they received a notice from the EPA declaring that their residential lot qualified as a wetland, that they had violated the Clean Water Act by pouring gravel fill on the lot, and that unless they restored the lot to its pre-construction condition, took other corrective measures, and gave EPA virtually unfettered access to the property and all of their records concerning it, they would be liable for up to $75,000 per day in fines. Because the Sacketts did not believe their property qualified as a wetland in the first place, they asked EPA for a hearing to reconsider the compliance order. The agency refused. The Sacketts then filed a lawsuit asking a federal district court to hold that their lot was not a protected wetland and to order the EPA to vacate its compliance requirements. EPA moved to dismiss that suit for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, arguing that the Clean Water Act did not permit judicial review of the order, at least until EPA itself sought to enforce the order's penalty provisions in federal court. The district court agreed with EPA and dismissed the suit, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed. It held that the Clean Water Act precludes pre-enforcement judicial review of EPA compliance orders, and that such preclusion does not violate a property owner's right to due process. The question before the Supreme Court was whether the Ninth Circuit erred in holding that the Sacketts had no right to judicial review of the compliance order under Chapter 7 of the APA, which provides for judicial review of final agency action for which there is no other adequate remedy in court. In a unanimous decision by Justice Scalia, the Supreme Court held that the Ninth Circuit did indeed err in dismissing the Sacketts case. Specifically, the court held that the EPA order the Sacketts wished to challenge was sufficiently final to allow judicial review under the APA, and that nothing in the Clean Water Act trumped that conclusion. In reaching this decision and rejecting the government's defense of the Ninth Circuit's ruling, the Supreme Court articulated several principles that I think are relevant to the availability of judicial review in agency cases generally. The court began by explaining why the EPA order at issue was, quote, final for purposes of APA review, even though the agency could have revisited it in additional administrative proceedings or an EPA-initiated court action. In so holding, the court cataloged what it called, quote, the hallmarks of APA finality that its opinions establish. And it went on to hold that the order in Sackett satisfied those hallmarks of finality because the order, quote, determined the Sackett's rights or obligations under a federal statute, here the Clean Water Act. The order also, quote, attached legal consequences to its terms by subjecting the Sacketts to monetary penalties and handicapping their chances of getting a permit for the construction the order prohibited. And finally, the order marked the, quote, consummation of the agency's decision-making process on the question whether the Sacketts' property was a wetland and was subject to Clean Water Act regulation. Notably, the court's analysis of these finality factors rested on APA precedents that are not unique to EPA or Clean Water Act review. And though the court's analysis of the third factor, whether the order marked the consummation of the agency process here, focused heavily on the fact that in this particular case, the EPA had refused the Sackett's request for an administrative hearing, the court went on to address even that issue in more general terms. Specifically, the court explained that the, quote, mere possibility of further agency action is not enough to make an, quote, otherwise final agency action non-final for APA purposes. Instead, where, as in Sackett, agency process, quote, confers no entitlement to further agency review, the order is final for purposes of judicial consideration under the APA. Last but certainly not least on the finality factor, the court emphasized that a challenged order need not impose, quote, self-executing sanctions in order to qualify as final for judicial review under the APA. Even where the challenged order could in some sense be characterized as merely a, quote, step in the process of agency decision-making because the agency could take some further action, the court said the order is final for purposes of court review if it makes clear that the agency's deliberation is, quote, at an end with respect to the question on the table. Here that question was whether the property qualified as a wetland. So the court explained that once the agency has issued an order evidencing a final deliberation on a particular statutory question, the order is final on that issue, and the fact that an agency may engage in further deliberation about how to enforce that decision or maybe to revisit it in a future case is a separate subject that will not itself immunize the order from APA review. Having determined that the challenged order was sufficiently final for APA purposes, the court went on to consider Chapter 7's requirement that the Sacketts have no other adequate remedy in a court. In addressing this requirement for review, the court explained that an adequate remedy for APA purposes must be one that is both capable of, quote, initiation by the plaintiff and one that would provide redress for the specific agency action challenged. Applying these criteria, the court rejected the government's argument that the Sacketts should not be allowed to proceed with their case because they could air their opposition to the EPA's jurisdiction either in an EPA-initiated enforcement suit or in a suit challenging an Army Corps of Engineers decision denying any application they might make for a permit allowing the construction the EPA had otherwise prohibited on their land. The court explained that an EPA-initiated suit would not satisfy the requirement that an adequate court remedy has to be one the plaintiffs can bring and initiate. And it explained that any suit the Sacketts could bring to challenge the Army Corps of Engineers' denial of a construction permit, which the Sacketts didn't think they needed in the first place, would not guarantee judicial review of the EPA's initial order classifying their property as a wetland. Indeed, the court noted the fact that the EPA had classified the property as a wetland and found a violation of the Clean Water Act would actually just prejudice the Sacketts' chances of obtaining a permit. The court then turned to the government's final argument that even if all of the requirements for APA review were satisfied for the reasons I just noted, the Clean Water Act itself nonetheless prohibited judicial review of the order. The court began by emphasizing the absence of any express Clean Water Act provision prohibiting judicial review of the order in question under the APA or otherwise. And that was significant because the court focused, obviously, on whether the statute directly and expressly prohibited review. If not, the court went on to say it raises the bar for the government to say that a statute overcomes the APA presumption of reviewability. The court then went on to reject the government's argument that the court should read the Clean Water Act as implicitly precluding judicial review. As an initial matter, the court rejected as, quote, question begging, the government's argument that the statutory provision allowing EPA to choose between issuing a compliance order and bringing an enforcement suit against an alleged violator showed Congress's intent to preclude court review of compliance orders. As the court explained, quote, there are eminently sound reasons other than insulation from judicial review why compliance orders are useful, and they are all entirely consistent with allowing judicial review when the recipient does not choose to comply with an order it thinks is erroneous. Basically, the court said the APA's presumption of judicial review is a repudiation of the principle that efficiency of regulation conquers all, and that an agency can avoid judicial review simply by styling an agency action as one that's directed at securing voluntary compliance with a statute. The court then made several important points relevant to APA cases more generally. First, it reiterated in very strong terms the APA's presumption of reviewability and its role in ensuring a judicial check on agency action. Second, it distinguished, and some might say narrowly construed, several prior decisions holding that regulatory statutes implicitly prohibited APA review of agency orders. Specifically, the court emphasized that cases finding such implied preclusion involved situations in which allowing review of the agency action in question would clearly have been contrary to or defeated the purpose of express statutory provisions. It explained, for example, that it refused to allow judicial review in two cases, Block and Fausto, because doing so would have disregarded express statutory provisions limiting such review to particular parties who complied with certain exhaustion requirements. Similarly, in a case called Erica, the court explained that allowing judicial review of the Medicare determination in issue would have disregarded Congress's clear choice, expressly stated in the statute, to permit judicial review of one class of benefits, but not another strongly parallel class of benefits. The Supreme Court found no such hallmarks of congressional intent in the Clean Water Act. Indeed, as the court emphasized, quote, there is no reason to think the Clean Water Act was uniquely designed to enable the strong arming of regulated parties into voluntary compliance without the opportunity for judicial review, particularly of the threshold question whether the party is within the agency's regulatory jurisdiction in the first place. Again, it's not surprising, given the facts of this case, that the court reversed the Ninth Circuit's decision dismissing this suit. That is, I think, the disposition that I and many others thought likely based on the case history and the pointed questions that virtually the entire court directed at the government during oral argument. I think, and as noted, the interesting question has always been how a majority, and particularly a unanimous opinion, reversing the Ninth Circuit would affect other cases, given that even the members of the court who saw this case as outrageous did not seem inclined to open the door to a flood of federal suits on agency warning or citation actions. I thought the court could write an opinion that avoided that result, but also provided some guidance that would help prevent cases like this from getting thrown out of court in the future, and I think that's exactly what the court did. The opinion is not groundbreaking in the sense that it doesn't overrule any precedents or establish a new standard of APA review, but it is important in that it reaffirms what I think are four basic principles that litigants in both EPA and other agency contexts may rely upon in pursuing and defending judicial review of agency actions. First, the opinion reaffirms, again in very strong terms, the presumption that agency decisions are subject to judicial scrutiny. Second, that parties who believe they have been injured wrongly by agency action should not have to wait for the agency to initiate court proceedings to vindicate their right to judicial review. Third, that an agency's own characterization of its actions as, quote, non-final or directed at, quote, voluntary compliance will not control the APA inquiry. Rather, courts can and should independently evaluate an order's finality and susceptibility to review using the criteria the Supreme Court articulated in SAC. Finally, the court should not lightly infer that Congress intended to override the APA's strong presumption of judicial review, and specifically should not read the cases in which the Supreme Court has held otherwise too broadly. For all of these reasons, Sackett, I think, is a case that's important for all EPA-regulated entities going forward. Again, the brief said there's approximately $1.7 billion annual market in permitting costs and proceedings, and also for the regulatory community more generally, because the basic issue is balancing respect for agency action with access to the judicial review that ensures the legitimacy of such acts and protect individual rights. And I expect the decision will embolden regulated parties to challenge more EPA and non-EPA actions in court. As I mentioned during the post-argument podcast, we recently prevailed in a healthcare case in the D.C. Circuit in which the government argued that a Medicare regulation was not subject to APA review under the same precedents, notably Block and Erica, that the government has now unsuccessfully asserted in Sackett. So with the Supreme Court weighing in, I think challenges like that will continue to happen. And I could also see regulated parties citing Sackett in bringing similar court challenges to review other HHS, specifically FDA, or even SEC actions. Finally, I think the decision may cause agencies to give some more thought to the substance as well as form of their decisions in terms of thinking ahead to when they want to preserve their ability to take further agency action versus subject their orders to court review. So I think this is not the last we'll see of Sackett, and it's not, again, a terribly surprising opinion, but nonetheless an important one for the business and regulatory communities going forward. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.